This episode is brought to you by our friends at Varidesk. Varidesk makes office furniture simple. Seriously, their height-adjustable standing desk is one of my favorites and something I use every day in my video production business, especially when I'm editing. It was really the first step to create a happier, healthier me and a more productive workspace. Today, Varidesk has a full line of furniture and accessories for the office and the classroom that are easy to order, assemble, and reconfigure as your needs change. Ready to work elevated? Go to varidesk.com/behindthebrand to learn more. Now let's get into our episode.
That people in sales or customer support or customer relationship management do not think this way. They're not measured to, they're not budgeted to, but someone's got to change the game, right? In the same way that I guarantee you every author is going to look at this and just think that there's a template to do this. And I think it's because we just sort of measure success by the wrong things. So the idea that on the marketing side we compete for attention, but that doesn't mean anything if it doesn't change or shift the experience. It doesn't matter if you don't feel, at the end of the day, what I hope you feel, which is to stay close to the brand and to talk about the brand or to make the brand part of your life. And I seek inspiration from random places, right? Because if I were to look at my competitors, or if I was to look at other authors or other speakers or bloggers, I would probably start to sound just like them. But if you look at the music industry as a metaphor for brands, you can actually start to see how fickle the consumer is becoming, right? So most artists who are not established don't ever make it the way that bands used to be able to make it, or artists used to be able to make it, unless they're manufactured, of course. But that's still, you still have to compete for relevance. But if you look at music today, the reason that part of it's just a complete mess is because you don't have that anymore. You have people always competing for attention. So a brand, as an artist, is just a satellite in my ecosystem, right? It's there for a minute, and then it's gone, because the next thing. So you talk to any teenager, right? 3 months ago, Fetty Wap was everything, right? And then you say, hey, so you still listen to Fetty? No. <It's> old. The only one who seems to transcend that is Drake. Right, and Kanye has to fight for it, but that, what we start to get into is what I call mediumism. None of these platforms, none of these techniques are going to work in a new world, right? We're competing in these new paradigms with old mindsets. And quite philosophically, we don't see the world as it is, we see the world as we are. And it's very difficult for us to be able to challenge convention in a world where our norms support older norms. And so what I had to do, and what any of you want to do in terms of change, is to kind of realize that if you're in the right place right now, you've got a battle that's greater than your role. If you're not in the right place right now, the grass is not greener all the time. But sometimes it is. But this is that weird moment, in a great moment, where we're standing at an intersection, right? The world is changing. It is absolutely changing. But we stand at this intersection where we can't just go about stuff the way we always have simply because that's the way we always have, right? And it's hard, right? I had to relearn how to write sentences. That's ridiculous, okay? At my age, and having to write a book like it's my first book, we're all, at an individual level, having to learn new expertise, new thinking, new techniques in order to be able to compete for an economy that's changing with or without us, right? And that intersection is you get to do the same old shit or you do some crazy new shit. It's one or the other. And one of those paths has a really interesting outcome. And it's like this. The world is going to evolve, and it is evolving, and the nice thing about it is that it's digital. means there's a ton of breadcrumbs. There's a ton of big data, there's a ton of small data. And all we have to do is pay attention to the things differently, not benchmark to yesterday, but benchmark to new possibilities, a lot of what ifs or why nots. So challenging convention is starting with questions like this. What is an experience? I don't care if you look at your competitors, I don't care if you look at what you have today, I guarantee you that that's not the answer to what is an experience. An experience is in the little things. It's in the thoughtful ideas that stitch together every moment that I do business with you that make you remember why it was special, because I took the time to do so. This is a Disney cruise ship. That cabin looks kind of like a cabin, right? But then it conforms in the very like origami way into a family-situated room so that families don't have to buy multiple rooms. They can just have a room that conforms to meet them. They have bathrooms that were intentionally designed so that way. Someone is using the restroom on this side, someone can be brushing their teeth or taking a shower on this side. It's all intentional. There's documentaries about the cruise ship architecture, to the finest little nuances of the elevators, to the chandeliers, to all of the aspects, because that is an experience, right? Some of you love Virgin America until you have to call them, right? On the flight, it's amazing. It's fantastic lighting. You think you're going into a club, you've got music playing, you've got these fancy dressed flight attendants, and then the experience breaks down when it's not consistent, right? So someone was intentional about part of it, just they didn't talk to the rest of the company. And so that's why the idea of experience design is the new marketing. The bricks on this building get smaller the higher and the taller the building gets, right? And it's meant to make you as an adult feel like a child in the park. It's intentional. Every aspect of this was designed and integrated. This is the Magic Band. It is probably the best investment in customer experience I've seen, but none of us think about it that way. To her, it's everything, right? She gets to come into the park, she gets to open her hotel door, she gets to pay for her food, gets to pay for her souvenirs. When she connects it to the app, she can make reservations. The restaurant knows proximity-wise that she's approaching, so her name will be all over the door, right? Some of us say, wow, that's pretty creepy. It also tracks all of her movement in the park, right? How long did she stand in queue? Where did she run into problems? And yes, to some of us older folks, it is creepy, right? But that's because we have a different definition of privacy, and we base innovation on yesterday's definition of privacy, where today's definition of privacy is called publicity. It is how you choose to give your data away in order for something in return until trust is broken. It's a completely different way of thinking and approaching business. She doesn't care. That's an experience, right? And to Disney, they're able to track, of course it costs them $1 billion, but still the intent was to figure out ways to improve every aspect of the experience. So remove friction that exists today, which any one of us can do in our customer journey, is where's their friction? And you're by default already starting to improve the experience. And then you can get proactive like they're doing to think about ways to innovate in the park experience. So they got rid of all the turnstiles. They're optimizing their fast pass. They're able to reconstruct certain aspects of the park. They're able to introduce new types of things. For example, if she says she wants to meet Mickey Mouse will be able to find her because of that band. So there's really amazing things that can unlock when you start to think differently about the approach. And this is where I learned that half of the stuff that I study has nothing to do with innovation based on technology. It has innovation in how we think. Do we look at the world today differently, right? So this is a picture that I found that I thought just sort of said it all, right? Face reality as it is. Okay, Brian, what does that mean? Nothing. But if you shift your perspective, you can actually see that it wasn't presented as the way that I showed you the first time. And that's where things start to unlock. When you look at the world differently, you actually get to see it differently. This is the hardest part, though, right? Having to see the world as a seven-time author differently was crushing, and it was debilitating. But I just didn't feel right doing things the way I used to do them. It had to be different. So the fight that we have is part technological as it is just human and psychological, right? Because there is no one market anymore. The market's just completely fragmented. I got a ton of data. I could show you just how bad it's getting, or good if you're an optimist. But this picture says it to me in every way, shape, and form. Executives today will look at this and say, this is exactly what's wrong with the world. Or parents will say that too. This is exactly what's wrong with the world. Nobody can be in the moment, except for this dear, sweet woman in the front. I believe that everybody's in the moment. And as a brand, I would want all of these other people, because they're sharing that moment with an audience of audiences of audiences. So you could flip this and you could say, oh, look at this selfish person in the front. She's not sharing this moment with all her Facebook friends. They couldn't be there, and she was the key. Experience didn't happen if it wasn't shared. Think about that. Your best experiences, whether you put it on Instagram or not, you share great experiences. You also share bad experiences. You tend to share bad experiences more than you share good experiences, because part of it's cathartic. That's why it's called venting. You have to get it out. So I learned that in order to change, I had to change how I saw things. This was the hardest part. It's a quote that just stuck in my brain from Leo Tolstoy. It said, we all talk of change, but none of us talk about changing ourselves. Right? So change is for the other person. Well, I guarantee you, because I also study innovation, if you're waiting for somebody to tell you what to do, you're on the wrong side of innovation. Right? Disruption happens to you or because of you. So this is an art installment where the photographer removes the phone from everyday scenarios. So you just kind of see just what life has become. There's no reason whatsoever I'm sharing this picture with you, by the way. Just thought it was cool. Also, though, that it does bring to life something that you might have read about in WTF and The End of Business and other books that I've written, which what I call the ego system. And this is becoming much more important with every day that passes. Technology, apps, services are conditioning each and every one of us. So take yourself out of work and just remind yourself that you're a human being. It's reminding each and every one of us that we are at the center of our own universe, right? So you want a car, there's an app for that. If you want a tamale, there's an app for that. If you want validation, post a selfie. There are constant reminders every single day that it's teaching the new consumer that they are literally at the center of the universe, right? And here's where things get fascinating, is that it is starting to spill over. Some industries faster than others, and some of the faster ones are insurance, finance, and healthcare. Why isn't there an Uber for healthcare? There will be. There will also be an Uber for banks, because the idea of a bank is different than how some of us look at banks. There is so much disruption on the horizon because of the ecosystem. And so if you think that there's an imperative to change how you design, to change how you market, to change how you develop products, now is the time, because once you start to feel disruption, it's too late. We all need people like you to start thinking about the future now, because that's how you bring about change, because change happens because of you, not to you. This is my favorite cover of Wired ever, because I have to actually explain this to some people. Some of you are laughing. For everybody else, never mind. But I kind of think about being young again today, right? Like, it's so hard to date. Now, all it takes is two emojis. Get what you want. Every time I look at this picture, though, I kind of like, what's the response? Is it like this? Okay, all right. So here's the thing, that we are all millennials now, regardless of your age. You're looking at your phone 1,500 times a week. That's adding up to about 177 minutes every day. All right, some of you it's more. Every pinch, every zoom, every swipe, every bit of validation is reprogramming you. This is why there's so much disruption, right? It's not just because something like Uber comes along and changes the game, it's because it facilitated all of the right things in the right way at the right time to take away a negative experience. No one uses Uber because they like taxi cabs, right? They use it because it caters to their lifestyle. Once you taste something new and great and better, you expect that across the board. This was the quote that inspired this book. And there's two, actually. The first one I don't have a slide for. The first quote was Maya Angelou. People will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. That is an experience. It's how you make someone feel. Why don't we design those? Why don't we care enough about people to instill that experience in every moment of truth? This was a video of a one-year-old baby on YouTube that I just randomly found. I don't know what I was doing, but I'm glad I was randomly doing stuff. She was pinching and zooming. Her father was recording it. And he thought, oh, you know what's gonna be funny? I'm gonna give her a magazine. So he gives her a magazine. And she starts crying, right? That's probably what I would do too. So her father says something profound. This text comes up over the video. You know, Steve Jobs has forever recoded my daughter's brain. To her, a magazine is an iPad that doesn't work, and it will be that way for the rest of her life. Whoa. That is exactly the problem. We're making decisions about the future of everything we do rooted on analog principles and metrics and processes and systems. And the whole world is starting to see it from a digital first. I don't care if you're digital native, I just mean digital or mobile first, right? You need to make a decision. The first place you go to is this, right? That is true for everybody. And when you start to get information as a consumer, you're going through analog centered or designed hoops that just happen to be digital, right? Think about this, it's 2016 and our concept of a website has not changed much, right? You click on any site, you go back to the 90s. Just like you turn on the TV, you go back to the 50s and 60s. It hasn't been reimagined for a new world because everybody in power, or everybody making decisions, everybody signing budgets, everybody measuring success, is living in a magazine world, right? But if you think about that intersection where we stand, one person sees that as an iPad that's broken, and the other person sees an iPad that's like marvelous, what a great invention. But to someone else, it's water, right? And we have to start thinking about the fact that people do this instinctively, intuitively. They do that not to read through paragraphs of website copy or galleries of e-commerce crap that you threw up there because that's just the software package you have. It is now having to be reimagined for an entirely new world because the world has moved on to the point where there are scientists studying to what effect is Tinder having on young kids. Not just because of sexually transmitted diseases, that's another story. But because of left, right, A, B, yes, no. And now they're having to re-examine, as their brains get rewired, if they have to rethink testing in high school and university. The answer is yes, by the way. Because the same reasons that went into designing this book differently, I could assure you that if I kept studying, by the way, this is just a fraction of stuff I learned. I couldn't get it in there. They just said, you better publish this or we're not going to publish it at all. But I would apply some of these insights incredibly differently to paper now that I know what's going on. And it's like this. It's not hard. You take all these crazy insights that's happening, and you could boil it down to anything, like ketchup, right? We have gone for decades with ketchup bottles, where to the point of not thinking, hey, we could do this differently, we thought about, all you have to do is hold it at a 45 degree angle, or you hit it from the back, or you get a knife and you get it in there, or you use the soft part of your palm and it just comes out nicely. We had techniques to make bad experiences work because we were okay with it. There's an entire generation that will not do that now. You are either going to work or you don't work. There's no patience, there's no time, there's no attention span, there's no alliance or allegiance to you, there's nothing. And we're riding a lot of this almost like cowboys into the sunset. So much so that the last year of my research has been with Google, actually, and I'm just able to start talking about it now. Google hasn't actually said this yet. Well, actually, no, that's not true. They put it in their quarterly report. Mobile search has overtaken desktop search. You don't search on mobile the way you search on the desktop, right? And they've started to figure out that if they don't figure this out, their big money maker is going to go down the tubes because brands are not thinking differently about how people search. They're still buying keywords, they're still designing websites, they're having to be pulled into the future by creating a responsively designed website, but we're still not rethinking, well, what is somebody trying to do? Well, it turns out it's breaking down into five moments. They're called micro moments. I want to learn, I want to buy, I want to know, I want to go, I want to do. And when you break out your phone, it's a very different process of what you do next. And experience architecture doesn't have to be so grand as cruise ship design. It could just be simply starting with fixing broken friction points and understanding new touch points. What happens when someone wants to learn? Where do they go? What do they do? Who do they trust? What questions are they asking? It's called keyword anthropology. There's about 6 to 8 questions that people always ask. You can go through it yourself. It's called empathy. You figure out what people are doing, what they're feeling, what they're not getting. Here's what else is blowing Google's mind. In micro moments, smartphone users are brand agnostic. 90% of them don't care who helps them. They're not going in like some of us hold on to from the days of yore. Oh, well, as long as we're one of the 4 to 6 brands that somebody has in their mind, as they start to cull down their discovery process, we just have to be one of them. But what happens if you're not in there at all? What happens if nobody's in there at all? Because they're starting with a fresh mind. That's what you're competing for now. And then Google is making massive investments to helping all of, whether you're a small or large company, be present in these new moments of truth. 3/4 of customers will actually go with a business that was just helpful in those little micro moments. You can be a small business, you can be a big business, but you just have to be there and you have to be useful. So why is this so difficult? It has nothing to do with it. All this information's out there. I mean, I spend most of my time giving it away, all of my research, all of my data, because this is not something I can do by myself. Plus, I was never happy challenging convention by myself. I need some cohorts. I think it's the only way we can change things. And it actually comes down to just perspective. We go through every single day trying to keep up. Right, and when you keep up with the norm or the status quo, it's very difficult to get in front of things. This blows my mind. Do you know that this is a metaphor for how we think about innovation? It's not really innovation, it's iteration. We see all this new technology, we see all these new devices, we see all these new apps, services, networks, and we just take the same old thinking to something new. And at best, what that is iteration, right? It's just doing things maybe better, right? So in this case, better looks like color-coded keys, backlit lighting, and a dedicated Netflix button. Innovation is doing new things that creates new value. And disruption is doing new things that make the old ones obsolete. Experience design is rooted in the combination of all three, with an emphasis on the latter two. This is so bad that I actually studied it. It's an infographic I created for the book. Do you know that, on average, a remote control has 70 buttons on it? And we say it's okay. The first app for the smartphone to control the television, what a great opportunity to innovate how you control the television. First app was a remote control. It was just iteration on a new platform. Apple's new TV has a remote that just has a touchpad and a Siri button, right? So the device is now familiar, but where the hard work was on the user interface. How does someone want to experience television in a way that's natural? That's where the innovation is, right? Or parking signs. I mean, you could just go all day long about things that we just don't challenge and that we put up with, but there's a whole generation of people who don't want to do that, right? The left is what was. New York City hired a design firm to come up with this. They paid them a whole bunch of money. They probably had to win all kinds of bids just to be able to do this. And it still sucks, right? You're driving, still trying to figure it out. And Daniel, to the point earlier about design, I mean, design is not the answer. Experience, where design brings it to life, is the answer. This is just some random graphic designer who said, well, this is how I'd want to see it. This makes sense. Am I in the green or am I in the red? Oh, and she has 1,000 different iterations of different experiences for parking signs. That was just one of them. So when you leave here, if it's one thing that I want you to take away, it's this idea of just unbiased perspective. It's just, we get in our own way. We don't even realize it. We let other things just sort of talk us out of what we believe deep down. We let processes and systems and management just sort of get in our way. And this is an image I've held on to over the years because it just continually reminds me that I, by design, because I'm older, see the world differently. So I have to force myself out of that zone to see the world as it is, right? And that's the difference between sympathy and empathy. Right, for some of you who haven't seen this image, this is it's called Text and Walk. It's an app. It turns a camera on your phone so you can safely walk the streets without getting hit. Walking into an intersection. It's also not the most popular app, right? Because it's really hard to hold your arms up. It's just easier to do this. But that is how life is, right? We can say, well, my day, blah, blah, blah. And then we start to sound like our parents and our grandparents. But what I want to share with you is sort of, as we bring this to a close, is a very old example that humanizes the process. This is Disney and the storyboarding process of Snow White. And for those who don't geek out on Disney stuff like I do, Snow White was the first animated feature. It was also the first process of storyboarding that Disney invented to test the stories, test the characters, test the believability of the scenarios and the characters themselves before actually doing the animation. And the story I'll tell briefly, because I could talk about this all night, was Airbnb, which really looked at, it's a 7-year-old company, but one of the founders, Brian Chesky, had read the autobiography of Disney, and he tells a story about how storyboarding changed the future of Disney. And I started to think about that, like, wow, you know, like when we tell stories, right, and the process of storyboarding was to tell a story that was believable and meaningful. When we tell stories, they sort of follow this arc, right? There's a buildup, there's some challenges and drama, and then there's this big crescendo, and then the finale, right? But if you think about marketing, it's like the opposite. Oh my God, look at us, woo! And then we go away. It's like campaigns run out of money, you know? We've got to move on. How did that happen? Like, what went wrong? Because we have hundreds and hundreds of years of storytelling that works, and we decide as brands to just, well, we'll just go the opposite way. So if you flip them you would actually have this idea of pervasive storytelling, right? And if you borrow from the storyboarding metaphor and you understand what experiences are, you can actually now start to literally storyboard what an experience looks like in every touch point, who the characters are, why you love them. And this is where all of these great disciplines that exist today in your organization that are disparate now come together. It's just a formula. UX plus CX plus BX equals X. It just equals experience. There's human-centered design, there's storytelling, and in the middle there is where experience architecture begins. And when you put together this grand sort of elusive term of omnichannel, you actually see that you can affect every aspect of the business to be held against your experience standard, your blueprint for what an experience is supposed to be and feel like, what it looks like, tastes like, etc. And now everybody's operating against that style guide, right? Instead of Pantone colors and fonts, you're now operating against an experience style guide. And that's why all of these things talk about a shared experience is the new brand, because they don't disappear. They collectively build upon one another. And in the storyboarding example, I'll just tell you quickly, Brian Chesky of Airbnb, they were about 4 years old at the time, and he decides that there was a big problem with the Airbnb experience. They built their brand on couches and rooms being sublet. And if you remember, there was a period there where there were just tons of bad press about orgies and parties and trash and thievery and all kinds of things, because the company itself didn't clearly say, we're an alternative to Hilton. So then they brought in, after reading the Disney autobiography, they brought in a Pixar artist who came in and taught them about storyboarding. And in the process of storyboarding, they learned what the story was of their customers. And they realized they had two customers. They had the people who were renting their homes, and there were about six different reasons why people did that. And then the people renting, and there were about five or six different reasons why they did that. And then they realized, well, they were just marketing to everybody, but not anyone at the same time. And they also realized that going through the storyboarding process that they weren't in control of just the aspects of experience that they thought they were, right? Website, app, transaction. They had to consider things like, well, is there a financial hardship? Is this a second property for the owner? Are they trying to make ends meet? Or the person renting, did they fly there? Were they in traffic? What were the aspects of just getting to the property, right? So that when you walk in, you're kind of coming in with all of this stuff that's inside of you. So the things that they couldn't control were also part of the experience. And so the storyboarding process helped them figure out, well, we have to build a community for homeowners so that they understand that when people come to that house, that they're coming off a bad flight experience, coming out of traffic, they're coming out of all kinds of other things, that, hey, when they open the door, why don't you do these things? This is the experience standard that we want you to be held to, right? I can tell you that they still have a lot of work to do, but this is their aspiration. And that is what we can work to as well, to the point where after I did that research, I hired the same Pixar artist to come in and help me figure out how to storyboard the reader experience, which is why I ended up rewriting the book, because the storyboarding process taught me so much about people who are overwhelmed with so much stuff that's out there, so much technology, so much thought leadership, so many conferences, so many blogs. What I'm really trying to do is this, and it helped me redesign the aspect of the book. So I'm not saying you gotta go hire a Pixar storyboarder, but just you have to see people differently. And so this is where I think things begin. Innovation is not anything that begins with technology, right? It begins because you see things differently. But it comes to life because you feel it. So I live in Silicon Valley, which is all technology all the time. But the greatest stories are those that start with, why couldn't I do this differently? Why can't we do this way? Why do we have to do it this way? It's always something that's driven inside, and then it's brought to life by the actions that you take, and those actions are yours to decide, right? And I can guarantee you that As part of my research on the other side, I study digital transformation and why big companies are changing. It always starts because of someone like you. It's not because of some executive. It's very few and far between. It is because of people like you that decide that this is the right thing to do. This is space. It has no boundaries. It's not a box that you have to think outside of. It's a space that's yours to design. And that's where this story begins. Thank you very much. Thank you.